Introduce our friend and frequent visiting minister, the Reverend Scott Dillard. Reverend Dillard is a professor of rhetoric at Georgia College and State University in Milledgeville. He has a bachelor in speech communication from Blackburn College and an MS and PhD in speech communication performance studies from Southern Illinois University. His areas of expertise and interest are performance studies, narrative, queer theory, gay spirituality, and service learning. Reverend Dillard is also the former dean of the Mountain School for Congregational Leadership. Reverend Dillard is an ordained interfaith minister who speaks in Unitarian Universalist pulpits throughout the Southeast. Scott and his husband, Chris Lamper, live in Milledgeville, Georgia. They have a daughter, Katrina, a grandson, Brandon, a granddaughter, Lillian, and another on the way. The title of Dr. Dillard's sermon today is What Makes a Father? Please join me in welcoming Reverend Scott Dillard.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Father's Day. Who are my fathers out in this audience here today? Come on, raise your hand. Who are the fathers? Look at all those fathers out there. I am just going to go ahead and brag and say I probably have already had the better Father's Day than you. You know, the daughter and the grandkids FaceTimed us this morning. That's the most wonderful thing in the whole wide world when you don't live near your kids is FaceTime. And the kids are small and they don't really understand FaceTime, so the whole thing's hysterical. But Lillian got on, and the first thing she showed me was she had something in her hand. And she desperately wanted me to know what this thing was. And she's two, so she has that English that only a mother understands. So Katrina had to translate everything. She was telling me she was taking her gummy vitamin, which she proceeded to do. And then she was holding something in her hand that she kept calling her baby. And I said, what's her baby? And she said, well, I was prepping food for later today, and I cut open a green pepper, and inside was another small green pepper, and I handed it to her, and she's carrying that around as her baby today. Brandon, who's four, had to show me five times how he could somersault off of the sofa. It ain't gonna get any better than that. I'm going to start with reading some stuff that I found in a magazine recently. And this one little page in this magazine said, this is the best advice I got from my dad about being a dad. So these are dads telling their sons how to be a dad. And this is what they said to their sons. No matter how your day went, if your kid asks to play catch or wants to go outside to practice, give them the time. You only get so much. To be honest, when I was having my first baby, it was unexpected with my girlfriend of 10 months, who is now my wife. My father said four words that have stuck with me now through three children. Time to man up. That resonated deeply, albeit simply, but powerfully, on too many levels. Be present. This was implied and not a direct quote because my dad was absent from my life. In order to take care of your family, you have to take care of yourself. Just like on airplanes, put your own mask on before assisting others. Always take time to teach a lesson. Don't just yell, don't just punish, but sit down and get their attention and just talk to them so that they understand next time. Kids don't learn from yelling. They become sneaky. Let your kids play. Don't focus so hard on their development that you forget to allow them to be a kid. They learn through activity and play, so let them engage on their level. Don't overthink or sweat the small stuff. They'll tell you how you're doing by the smiles on their faces and the hugs they give you. And the last piece of advice that was given to a son from his father, don't F it up. Now, when we read all of that bits of advice, what I sort of take away from that is there is no one way to be a father, and certainly no one right way to be a father. And there's just lots of room for doing the work that goes into it. Now, my own father has never spoken to me about what it takes to be a father. I think he saw his gay son and thought, oh, why bother? but I wonder what he would say. And maybe today, if I can actually get him to speak to me on the phone, he'll tell me. It's not that he's not speaking to me. It's just that Mom will answer the phone, and I will relay Happy Father's Day to Dad, and I'll hear him say thank you in the background. He does not like to talk on the phone. It just doesn't matter. The only time it happens is if it might be on Father's Day, and my mother's kind of like fed up with this sort of childish behavior and says, it's Father's Day, your children want to talk to you, they're calling you on the phone, and she makes him answer, and he gets off as quickly as possible. So my guess is he probably is not up for this question today, but maybe face-to-face the next time. So he never gave me any advice for being a father. At least not verbally. But oftentimes fathers show you how to be a father rather than tell you how to be a father. And I think my father did it more through modeling. He modeled, I think, for me what I think a father ought to be or could be. He modeled for me stability and presence. And I think most importantly for me, he modeled security. I always felt safe growing up. And that's a gift that I think I got primarily from my father. I knew that no matter what, my father would be there for me. It didn't matter if I got in trouble. My father was going to stand in front of me and take care of it somehow. It didn't mean I wouldn't get it when we got home, because I deserved it. But he was going to take care of me out in the world until I could learn to do that myself. So I never doubted growing up that he would be with me. I never had children of my own, no biological children. So I'm not a biological father. People always have told me throughout my life, particularly when I was younger, oh, you'll make such a good father. And my response was always, no, I won't. And I meant it, and I believed it. And I think if I had been married, let's say, to a woman and we'd thought about children, I probably would have said, I don't want that. Because I don't think I was ready for that, prepared for that, or perhaps even suited for that. You see, I'm not a patient person. And when I watch, you're laughing, see, she knows, right? It takes patience to be a mother or a father. And sometimes particularly for a father, it seems to me. And I'm not selfless enough to be a father. Now that doesn't mean I haven't fathered in some ways in my lifetime. I have been a stepfather to Katrina since she was in the sixth grade. But it was really just a part-time stepfather for most of the time that she was growing up. We didn't live in the same household. I don't have the same type of relationship with her that she does, say, with her dad, nor should I. I think she and I created a relationship where she comes to me to ask my opinions on things in life. Now, I'm sure she does this with her father, too. But she knows that she's likely to get a much different, perhaps less diplomatic answer from me. I've often told Chris, I said, you know, sometimes she just wants you to be her dad because he has the occupational hazard of having been a counselor in school systems. And when I hear him talking to her, he's saying things like, you know, and I was teasing about this because I ask him this all the time, how does that make you feel? So she just wants you to tell her what to do. So I just tell her what I think she ought to do. And I remember once riding in a car with her, and she was dating this young man. And they'd been dating for quite some time. And her father and I didn't care for this young man. Look at these nodding parent heads. You've all been there, haven't you? Yes, yes. And you know, the worst thing to really do in that situation is to tell your daughter or your son that you don't like them, or they ought to break up with them, or what you think about it, because they're going to get married like tomorrow. But she did ask me in the car, and she said it very seriously, Daddy Scott, do you think I should marry Matt? And I didn't even think about it. I just said, no. And she said, oh, well, why not? And I thought, I can't just say, because I don't like him. And I scrambled in my head. And this is probably the worst moment of my life as a stepfather. But I'm going to tell you what I said, because it's embarrassing. I said to her, well, because if you got married and you had babies, I don't think they'd be very attractive babies. It gets worse. And I followed that bit of sage advice with, and Daddy Scott ain't looking after no ugly grandbabies. She did not marry this young man, not, I'm sure, for anything that I said. I'm pretty sure that what did it was she moved in with him. That lasted about 2 months. It was over. Another way in which I fathered, besides with Katrina. Shortly after I turned 50, I was in a restaurant. I'm using that term lightly. It was a huddle house. And I was with a group of my students. I often take my students out for lunch or breakfast or something, right? Because that's where I get to know them and learn about them and learn how to really teach them. And we had been spending the morning, or we had planned to spend the morning at the soup kitchen where my students do their service learning work. But for some reason they were closed and they had forgotten to tell us. So I said, oh, let's just go to breakfast. So we went to breakfast. So I thought, let's just sit and talk. And I was sitting next to, in one of those booths, with a student named Graham. And the waitress came and she was going to take our order. And she looked at me and then she looked at Graham and then she said to me, he must be your son. And everyone laughed. And I said, no. And I said, and you know, I just turned 50 this week and that kind of hurts. But from then on, Graham called me Dad. I would be in class and Graham would have his hand up. And I would call on him, and he would start it like this. Yes, Dad, and then he would, and that changes the dynamic, trust me, right? But it also was good or bad on his part, right? Sometimes he got away with things, other times he didn't. But that, all right, if I'm gonna be your dad, no, right? Yeah. He would do this when he sent me an email. Hey, Dad. whenever I still hear from him, it's to Dad. Eventually, a number of his classmates started calling me Dad too. And when I took them all to this performance festival, my colleagues from around the country heard my students calling me Dad. And they kind of went, is that like a thing with you? Or do you tell them to do that? And I'm like, no, it just happened. But you know what? Simply by having them call me that made me feel like one to them. It made me very protective of them and my students from then on out. And it made me want to nurture them more and advise them more and care for them. At some point, one of my colleagues had gotten ill and could not teach, and we had to replace him for a year while he was out. And we hired a woman for a one-year position. And things did not go well with this young woman. I don't really know what her difficulty was with the students or why she couldn't adjust to the climate. But she did things that students kept bringing to me as complaints day after day after day after day after day. What it boiled down to, I think, was she was very disrespectful of the students. She was demeaning to the students. She was condescending, and she didn't know how to teach them. And I remember saying, after listening to this for a good month and a half, without thinking, I said to one of my colleagues, you don't come into my house and treat my kids that way. And I meant it. I won't bore you with the long story of it. She didn't last long. She tried to go to HR and accuse us of all sorts of things, but because every time one of the students came in and told me stuff, I wrote it down. And I didn't keep it. I sent it forward every single time it happened. So by the time I got called into HR, I had a packet of documents to set in front of them. This is also something that I learned from Chris, right? This is a dad thing that Chris probably has handed down to his daughter. Whenever you're in trouble at work, and anybody sends you something or anything happens, you put it in a file. A CYA file. Cover your bio. Yeah. Now, I've watched Katrina and Chris together over the years. They're very close. And they're very much alike. And sometimes that's charming, and sometimes it's unnerving, let's say. They have very similar communication styles. Honestly, I don't even know what they're talking about sometimes. They can be chatting away about something as I try to figure out what the subject of the conversation is. One of them will say something like, hey, do you remember that time we were riding down that street? Oh yeah, past that house, and then that guy came out? That was funny. And I always look at them and I say, there you go, speaking that twin language again. But it's sweet that they get each other on that level. When Chris was raising his daughter and she was getting into around the time to go away to college, I remember asking him if he was sad to see his little girl grow up and leaving him. And he said no. That's what's supposed to happen. And that if she's ready to go, I did my job well. But of course, she hasn't ever really left him, has she? She's always with him in his life. And he's always there for her. I remember when Katrina was going to have her second child, and she called her father and said, I'm due on such and such a date. I want you to come up the week before my due date, because when I have the kid, I'm going to need help with Brandon, the firstborn, for a little while. And so, of course, he went. And he got there one sort of evening, and she wasn't due for a week, mind you. And he got up the next morning, and the first thing he heard from her was, Dad, I think we're going to go to the hospital now. Got there just in time to see the baby. I remember when Katrina had lived with us for a few years when she was doing her nursing degree, and she had left and she'd gone on to her own career, and she'd been gone for a year or so. And Chris had to have a surgery, not a major surgery, but a surgery nonetheless. And she insisted on flying down because, in her words, Dad, there's no such thing as minor surgery. And because she's the nurse, we have to agree with her. She calls him just to have him tell her how to handle something around the house, how to fix something, how to do something, or even to advise her on her marriage. These are all sort of personal things about me and my relationship to fatherhood and how I've been able to see it. But there's some other things that I'd kind of like to talk with you about. I want to talk to you about some of the ways in which we frame the role of father in our society that I wish we would stop doing. How many of you ever heard a phrase like this while you were growing up? Just wait until your father gets home. You know what? We laugh about it, but guess what? Those are ugly words. What are they saying about fathers? What are they saying about the way we, as our culture, look at a father? The words sort of distill this role of the father down to, I think, an essence. He is the enforcer. He is to be feared. For if you've done something wrong, it is he who will punish you. I believe it's sort of rooted in maybe that Old Testament understanding of God our Father, who rules on our worth to be saved or punished. It feels to me oftentimes as some Jonathan Edwards sinners in the hands of an angry God moment, and an understanding of how to raise your children. A spare the rod, spoil the child style of parenting. Now, you know, some men embrace this role, and they probably use it very judiciously, and probably that just wait until your father comes home is a hollow threat in a household, because the father has no intention of doing anything but loving that child. Whenever my mother said it, we laughed because she was way more scary than my dad ever could be. But is this really the best that we can come up with for the role of the father? How about we finish the phrase? How about we complete it without its implied threat? What if we said, wait until your father comes home so he can use his knowledge to help you with that problem. Wait until your father gets home so he can comfort you after your difficult day. Wait until your father comes home so he can share in your good news. Wait until your father gets home so he can play with you, laugh with you, and hold you. I dare say that there are fathers out there who are viewed this way and are allowed their full humanity as a dad. Even fathers who embrace the role as father the dreaded upon his return, I think eventually reject that role. I bet that when they become grandfathers, they do. Those men learn more about the real joys of fatherhood. How many grandpas I got in this room? Oh, just a few. Yeah. It's so much easier than the kids, right? Yes? It's so much more joyful. You always get to be that person, don't you? Of joy and fun. You see, being grandpa, I think, is a delight. It seems to me it's about pure love and only that. No one ever says, wait until your grandpa gets home. No, they say, grandpa's coming. You want to go see grandpa? Even as a stepfather, I see myself as a grandpa. I see it as a softer light than I did as stepfather. The grandkids, they're just to be enjoyed, and in turn they enjoy you, because you can give them back. Last year, on my birthday, I got the very best present in the whole wide world from Brandon, our grandson. And it came to me on my phone as a text message, but it was a video, and I'd just gotten to work, and there it was. And I played it, and he was three at the time, and he was standing at a piano, and I hear Katrina telling him, go ahead, and he starts to play Happy Birthday. Now he gets a little into it, and he kind of messes up, and he goes, and he started over, and he got all the way through it, and that last little flourish, because he was playing with one hand, that last little flourish with the second hand, right? He had to walk a little further down to get the keys. And I just sat there thinking to myself, this birthday ain't gonna get any better than that. And I showed my friend Nancy at work. See, Nancy and I became grandparents right around the same time, and we keep having them right around the same time, right? And she'll have one and then I do, and then she has one and then I do, and now we're gonna be even again soon. Nancy and I decided that we would stop bothering everyone else in the department with our pictures of grandkids, and we would just meet in the hallway once or twice a week and share all our pictures and videos and our stories. And then, people still roll their eyes as they walk by. But they're like, hey, we ain't bothering you. It's a great, great moment to have in your life. It's what we passed on. Knowing that the daughter we helped raise thought enough of me on that day that she got up that morning, mind you, and taught that child to play that song. He had just learned it at 3 years old. Yeah, I'm a doting grandpa. I have it on my phone if you want to see it. And you know what? Maybe that's the greatest gift of fatherhood. Thank you.
Any comments, questions, hand raising?
Want to brag on your own kids, grandkids? Show me pictures.
Thank you.
Thank you.